Do you believe that? That's the real question of Advent for us, friends. Are we waiting because we believe that there's something right around the corner? Or have we just simply given up and we're just here? This is the two choices, the two paths that are presented to us in Advent. We can wait because we've given up, or we can wait with expectation. And my hope is that you will choose the path of expectation, that you will choose the path of saying there is something right around the bend, that night is not the end, but there is joy that comes in the morning. Do you believe in joy? Do you believe in delight? Do you believe in real happiness? If you're like me, you've read a lot of self-help books in your life. Because some of us need a little bit more help than others, right? And some of us are just interested in that stuff, and some of us just endlessly go, you know what? My happiness is at the end of this book somewhere, right? And sometimes I just buy a bunch of those and put them on my shelf and act like I've read them. Anyone do that? Never, right? Because somewhere in there, there's this expectation, there's this waiting of going, maybe, just maybe. But the problem is, in fact, the problem far too often is, those books actually collect dust on our shelves, and they collect dust in our hearts, because we don't actually believe that joy is possible. Now, we live in a society that, in one sense, is obsessed with happiness, right? I mean, that's why that self-help section exists, right? We are obsessed with finding a deep sense of success, right, through our consumeristic ways, right, that will satiate us and make us feel like we are good, right? And in fact, I mean, let's be honest, we all want that, right? Like, of course, I want to wake up and go, I have nothing to worry about in the world. It's all been taken care of. I've got all the money that I need. I've got all the friends that I need. My family is wonderful and great, and there's nothing to worry about there. My health, oh, the doctors just speak about how I'm a specimen of health, right? And my neighbors are great, and they all vote the same way I did, right? And when I turn on the news, whether it's on my device or on a larger screen, they just talk about all the great things in the world, right? That's what we have, this kind of fairy tale in our head of what happiness looks like, right? Oh, and I forgot, I'm laying back in a chair with an umbrella drink in hand, right? Uh-huh. And we vacation that way too, don't we? Right? We trick ourselves into believing that if we can get 3 days or 5 days or 7 days of that, then somehow we've arrived, right? But then we get back in the car, take the plane ride or whatever it is, back to reality, right? And discover that the umbrella drink didn't quite have all that it needed inside of it. Right? Yeah. And so you and I are left in this spot of going, how do I find happiness? And occasionally we even go a little further. How can I find joy? How can I find delight in the midst of this world and this life? And if you have not figured it out by now, friends, the world is not just going to hand you delight on a stick. Right? It's not just going to hand you happiness. And in fact, life's going to be filled with a lot of grief, a lot of stress, a lot of despair. And you and I have the choice to make of saying, I'm going to find the light and joy in the midst of it. When we come to this text in Isaiah, like so many other texts so far in Advent, things weren't going well. In fact, most of the time when you open the Bible, the reason why anyone has written anything about that time at all is because things were not going well. In fact, people don't really write things that last across the generations when things are easy peasy, right? That's not what endures among humanity. And it's not what endures in the divine. What endures is those things that speak to our hardest, most difficult moments in life. And so when this is taking place, King Hezekiah is trying to figure out what to do with his nation as the Assyrians are barking down his door. As the Assyrians are right outside, and just to make things even better and worse and more complicated all at the same time, the Egyptians are willing to make a deal with you. We'll keep you protected from those big bad Assyrians if you give us everything that you have. And that's typically how that works in the world, right? I'm sure lots of nations around the world feel like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place today in those ways, right? So we can imagine if we're looking at a nation like Mexico or India or wherever it is, they're looking at all of these powers that be and going, wait a minute, which way do I go here, right? And they feel that push and pull and that tension. And if you ever thought scripture wasn't political, then you didn't read the word king in front of half the names in the Bible. You didn't read all the words about nations that are in there because it's extremely political and economic and all the different things. Isaiah 35 is one of those texts. It's written in the midst of real life, historic situations of grief and difficulty and all the complexities that economics and politics and religion add to that. And we come to chapter 35, verse 1. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. Shall be glad. The wilderness and the desert shall be glad. I don't know about you, but if you've ever walked out into some real wilderness, right, and particularly desert-like wilderness, and you're looking around for what might be shelter or water, right, or food, you don't look up and go, I'm delighted to be here, right? You don't look out and go, oh, I'm so glad that I'm stuck in this place. God has provided so much for me out here in the middle of nowhere, right? No, no one thinks that. In fact, you have an opposite feeling. You are scared. You're terrified. You are at this point of going, I don't think I will live. And in the midst of that despair, in the midst of that barrenness, in the midst of that desert, you and I are tempted, like all other human beings, to think this is all there is. But Isaiah gives us a different image. I love the name of this flower, the crocus. Like, it feels like someone got something stuck in their throat when they said it, right? The crocus. Now, how many of you are familiar with the crocus? Okay, good. Okay, I was not. Okay, because I have no idea about anything in the world that's practical. Okay? And so I had to look this flower up probably for like the 9th time in my life because I have preached this text before. And I was like, what's the crocus again? And so I looked it up, and the great thing about AI is it gave me a whole lot about the crocus, way more than I ever needed to know about this flower. But guess what? It's that kind of flower that pushes through and says, you're going to notice me. I'm going to come up in the midst of whatever the land throws at me. I'm going to pop up no matter what the weather throws at me. I'm going to come up and create beauty and delight and joy and gladness, even when everything else seems absolutely parched. When everything else seems absolutely empty, when everything else seems absolutely full of despair, the crocus pops out of the ground. And I want you to say something to yourself this morning, because I want you to take it into your week. I am going to be a crocus this week. Can you say that with me? I am going to be a crocus this week. I am going to be a crocus this week. Say it again. I am going to be a crocus this week. Now, you didn't think you were going to say that when you came to church this morning. But this is what our world needs. People who are willing to choose the way of delight and joy and gladness no matter what is happening in life. In fact, more importantly, when life is at its roughest, we say, I am going to be a crocus this week. I am going to be full of delight and joy and goodness in the midst of the desert. I am going to choose a different way, a different path, a different road, because God is up to something. Now, I want you to stop and think, how many times have you tried to will yourself into positivity? Doesn't work for very long, does it? No. I mean, I can put on a shiny face for a moment, right? I can even get myself all psyched up inside that, like, yeah, I've got this, right? And then somewhere about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, life lands a giant punch to my gut that leaves me on the ground. Anyone ever feel that way? Mm-hmm. When I look around the room, I see many people who have been punched in the gut in just recent weeks, in recent months. And I watch you, and I watch myself turn around and go, okay, let's do this. I've got this, man. I get all rockied up, right? Like, eye of the tiger here, people, right? Like, I just got to get all juiced up, essentially, inside, and I've got life, right? I can do this, right? Hit me with some caffeine and some coffee, and I've got this in life, right? For a few hours. Sometimes only for a few minutes. And then it's a fleeting thing and it's gone. Because it wasn't founded in anything real. It wasn't rooted into a different reality. And so it burns up quickly and is gone. Isaiah 35 gives us real ground to root this joy, this delight in. Isaiah 35 looks at us and says, there's a different reality right around the corner. God is up to something in our world. God is about to do something that we didn't think possible. So strengthen the weak hands. Make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have a fearful heart, be strong. Do not fear. Here is your God. And here's the part that I want you to pay attention to, because this is what our world often needs and sometimes runs counter to our fairy tale suburban Christianity. God will come with vengeance, with terrible recompense. God will come and save you. Do you hear those words? Now, sometimes we shrink back from that kind of Old Testament language, right? Oh, there's this God up there who's going to whack at me for all the bad things I've done. Or if it's read in context, God's going to do something about all the horrible things going on in the world. God's going to come and be that strong, mighty force in life that shifts everything, that transforms things, that enacts justice in the world, that comes into a situation that says, I'm going to turn this place upside down. And so at this time of the year, we hear the echoes, the undertones of Mary herself and her Magnificat as she sings, as she prays, as she pleads with God to bring down the mountains and lift up the valleys, because the world needs righted. The world needs turned upside down. All of the things creating all of the terrible stuff in the world that's actually creating all of that fear, all of that grief, those Assyrians and those Egyptians out there need to be flipped so that the world can experience joy all the time. And when we believe that there's a God like that, guess what? I can put a smile on my face, not because I'm forcing it, but because I know how the story ends. I know what's about to happen. I know that there is going to be this baby who is born, who's going to turn the world upside down, who's going to get deep inside the hearts of people who claim that name, who say, my job this week is to be a crocus in the midst of the desert. My question, friends, is will you be a crocus? Will you stick up out of the ground in the midst of the desert and shine that light for other people, whispering to them, this dry ground is not the end? You have several ways of beginning to enter into that story this morning, friends. You have a way of entering into this practice of being a crocus. It's a spiritual practice, I promise. I want you to grab that Grace Steps flap off of that piece of paper right now. I want you to look at that first section that says cares and concerns. I want you to think about, what is the desert that I am in right now? What is the desert our world is in right now? And what do you need to write in that section that is honest about the desert that you and I are in? And then the second piece is, I want you to take that celebration and blessing section, and I want you to write about the crocuses in your life. These lights that shine up in the midst of all of the cares and all of the concerns and all the things that are bringing us down. The third piece is, I want you to identify people and groups out there that already are a crocus to you. I want you to spotlight things out there in the world that you go, that group, that business, that coach, that teacher, that neighbor, that person, they are doing something to bring light into the world. And then I want you to take that fourth section extra seriously this morning. And I want you to list someone's name there that you go, I want to invite them into the way of living like a crocus. And if you're brave enough, maybe you'll even say that phrase to them and really freak them out. Because I promise you, no one's ever shared the gospel of Jesus Christ by looking at someone and saying, I want you to be a crocus with me. And that doesn't sound like proselytizing, does it? And that invite into joy and into delight might be the very thing that a neighbor or friend needs this season. And as the band plays and as they sing, I invite you to take those Grace Steps cards, to take them back to these candle tables, to put it in those baskets that are on the wall, and if you so choose, to light a candle and dedicate that card to God as your first step into being a crocus. Let's be crocuses this morning.